Good afternoon. I'm Kate Manahan. Thank you for joining me for the 245th edition of New Mainers Speak. This is a bi-weekly half-hour program where you can hear firsthand about the lives of some of Maine's immigrants. During the show, we visit with individuals regarding their life stories and enduring hopes as New Mainers. My guest today is Nancy Kamaliza. She grew up in Kigali, Rwanda, where her mother thought it was a good idea for the kids to go to an English-speaking school. Now she's been speaking English for half her life, which was a huge asset when she moved to New York and then Maine in 2018. Today, Nancy is the Community and Diversity Specialist at Bangor Savings Bank, which is a nice fit for her excellent people skills and a background in business and finance. It is such a pleasure to have you here on New Mainers Speak today, Nancy.
Thank you so much for having me, Kate. I'm happy to be here too.
When you were a girl, I wondered if you could tell me what an average Sunday looked like at your house.
I think Sunday back home was a family day. We're a very religious family, so we would wake up and put on our best outfit, go to church every Sunday. At some point, I was even part of a choir, my mother also. And then every time we left church, it's either you'd go visit a family friend or go back home and have lunch together. So Sunday was definitely, like, the memories that I have were beautiful. It was the day to reconnect with the family, with our mother or with friends, and then take a nap, like a very relaxing kind of day. Beautiful memories from that time.
How many siblings did you share this experience with?
Three. So I have one brother and two young sisters. I'm the firstborn in my family. And I think being the firstborn meant that I was, I'd say, closer to my mother and more involved in church things. Like everywhere she would go, she would, I would drag me with her. So the others were a little bit younger. I don't know whether their memories might not be the same as mine because I lived it longer than they did before we grew up and started doing our own things. And nobody wanted to wake up on Sunday. We all wanted to sleep in because we were out on Saturdays. So it didn't last that long. But yeah, when I was younger, that's definitely what we did.
What kind of church did you all attend?
What do you call it here? I think Protestant?
Protestant, so, sure.
Yeah. Yes, we're not very Catholic, but I was very invested. I'm trying to remember the word they used, but we had like a group of people who just pray for the country and pray for other people's issues. And then I was part of that group for like a year or two. But this, just to show you, like, imagine an 11-year-old kid waking up at 5 a.m. just to go pray. I was very invested. But I don't know what happened to me. No longer in that world. Things have changed.
Yes. But yeah. What a powerful 11-year-old you were to feel as if you could make a difference in the world for somebody for the better. You were willing to get up early to do that.
Well, I love, yeah, the way you put it, you're right. And but I also think it really made me build a relationship with God. I'm very spiritual. I'm not religious anymore. I think that the thirst, like you're trying to longing for something, for the belonging, but also understanding more about your purpose on the earth, not that I found it yet, but I think that's just that God can see, you know, that thirst, like even at 11-year-old, and he will reveal himself to you in different ways. So I'm not religious, but I'm very spiritual.
Yeah, you took that with you.
Yes.
Absolutely. Yeah. And did you have any passions or hobbies or things that you did when you had a little free time?
Yes. So I have to point, I was a very lazy kid. I didn't like leaving home for anything. So the only thing that I could do is watch TV. I watched lots of TV, and I had so much influence from the American entertainment industry because everything we were watching was fed to us from the US. You guys have like the monopoly of the entertainment industry worldwide. I would know what Britney Spears did before I knew the new singer in my own country and gossip and everything that's related to celebrities. So I loved movies a lot. I'm still passionate about it. And I was trying to trace where that passion came from. And I really think it came from that, the laziness, not wanting to leave the house. So I started watching a lot of TV. And then I fell in love with cinematography. At some point, I even studied it and wanted to become an actor. Yeah, so movies was my passion. It was my way to escape because I was in a, it's a small world. It's a very small town. You don't really get to be exposed to a lot of things. But I think through movies, I was able to escape and live through other people's experiences of what I could see on TV. It was like a magical world and they dream about it. And today I'm so grateful because I think I became much more creative and my dreams got bigger because I could see what was out there, even though it was not part of my world. But I knew that there was another world, that there was more, and I was able to discover that through movies. So yeah, my passion was definitely movies, always.
Can you tell us a favorite movie or two?
Yes, My Best Friend's Wedding was my favorite movie. It's still my favorite movie. And funny story, the reason is I could relate to that story. I can't remember how old I was, but I had a crush on my best friend. And I felt like I was Julia Roberts in her role where she's in love with her best friend but doesn't tell him until he finds another woman, and then she's trying to sabotage the wedding. And I felt like I had the same personality as her, very bubbly, clumsy, you know, crazy. I felt like I was kind of similar to her. But so that's still my favorite movie of all time. It's My Best Friend's Wedding. And the second one is very cliche. It's Titanic, because I'm very romantic. So those two, those two are my favorite movies. Yes, still are.
Yeah. Wonderful. I love getting the specifics. That's terrific. And then you were living in the big city, and did you go to university in Kigali?
Yes. So I went to the University of Rwanda in the College of Business because I was doing my bachelor's in business administration, but I majored in finance. So yeah, in Kigali. Yeah.
Yeah. Finance major.
I worked for this international company. Great, great company. Wonderful people. I loved it. But I did not necessarily like my job. Specifically, my personality did not match basically the job that I was doing, even though I was able to do it, but it took me more efforts, and you know, I was not innovative and I was not motivated at all, because it was like a lot of, you know, crunching numbers and administrative paperwork, and that's not my, you know, my biggest strength. So I would do it because it was my way to earn money, make a living. The pay was good. I got a chance to travel through that company, and it, you know, it exposed me to more things, but it did not fulfill me as a person deep inside. I was miserable, but also on the outside, it looked like I was living my best life.
Yeah, you were making it, but it wasn't satisfying your heart.
Exactly.
Yeah. Exactly. If you're just joining this conversation, welcome. You're listening to New Mainers Speak. I'm Kate Manahan, and my guest today is Nancy Kamaliza. When she first arrived in Portland in 2018, she started over, leaning into a whole new skill set from finance to people. She volunteered at Greater Portland Immigrant Welcome Center and then at the United Way, where she became familiar with all the local nonprofits. And now she applies her global understanding as the community and diversity specialist at Bangor Savings Bank, even from her home computer, as COVID would have it. So Nancy, it must have been really daunting sometimes in the past couple of years to start over, yet you've been able to get a good job here, make friends, find housing, and even change career directions, all before a pandemic hit.
Yeah.
But now that you have things more settled in your life, you've noticed some of the rumblings from Rwanda's past bubbling up in your psyche and in your life, and your peers have noticed the same. I wondered if you could tell us a little bit about your experience with that.
Yeah, so I think a lot of it, realization started with this year, with the pandemic, being stuck at home. I live in a one-bedroom apartment by myself, so I had a lot of time alone without seeing anybody and a lot of thinking, and it was extremely depressing and really hard because I feel like back home, you're always surrounded by people. You know, most of us come from families of 3, 4, 5 children, so you don't really have any alone time per se. And then you're going to work, and then so many other social activities that you're doing. And when you get to, you know, the Western world, I would say it's much more, it's very lonely. So even if you meet people at work, everybody wants to go home and do their own stuff. Like, it's not like you're hanging out after work with your colleagues, or everybody's busy. Also, sometimes even in the community that you live in, people work different shifts. So it's not like everybody's doing a 9-to-5 job and you can all hang out after work. So I would say the first thing that made me realize it, or go back and really reflect on my past and my feelings and my traumas and all that, was the fact that I had so much alone time. So enough time to think. And then I was scared because I realized that I didn't know who I was to begin with. And second, once I found out who I was, I didn't like who I found out. I was petrified because I noticed like so many dark areas in my heart and in myself that I had never seen because, again, so many distractions. You're always moving. And I'm an extrovert. I'm always talking. I'm always smiling. So you would think that I'm the happiest person, but it's really not true because when I started looking deep inside, there were so many dark things. And then the other second thing was being in a different world. I would observe my American friends that I've met here, people my age or my generation, and looking at their everyday behaviors, some of the really healthy habits that they had built over time. And I would be like, why am I not like them? Like, why? I would see someone at 27 years, like very responsible, maybe already about to buy a house or being, you know, in a serious relationship. Like they're living an adult life. And I was like, I'm 27 and I feel like I'm really behind. And then I started like making those observations and being like, why are these people much mentally stable, financially stable than I am? And then second, why do I have all these dark spaces, you know, within myself? And then through that comparison, I would look back and maybe visit their families. And then you realize either they grew up in a household that was stable, they had both parents, they've never had to worry about food or clothes, they went through good education, like all those things that I didn't necessarily have growing up. So I'll be like, okay, I need to be, first of all, kind to myself and be like, it's okay if you're not on the same level right now. It's not a race. But at the same time, there's a reason why, you know, there's so many challenges that you've gone through that these people did not go through. So the fact that you're even sitting on the same table is already a win for you. Let's start from there. And then I'm like, okay, but then what's wrong? Why am I not here? Why am I mentally not here? Why am I emotionally not here? Am I struggling? And then that's when I looked back and with some of my other friends who also moved to the US, we'll talk about these things, my people like same generation. And we realized that not only were being raised in a broken country, but most of our families were also broken and completely traumatized because we are the generation that lived during the genocide, but were too young to remember, but still our parents fully experienced it. So now imagine a country that's trying to rebuild itself. There's some people that like literally dealing with basic things, which is we need food on the table, we need clothes, and the country needs roads. Nobody had time to go through your emotions and the trauma. It was just too horrific, first of all, for people to face it. So I think a lot of them just covered it up just to survive, just went straight into survival mode. But what happens is those are emotionally unavailable parents. It's a whole generation that's raising traumatized kids. Again, because everybody's in the same boat, we don't realize it in the moment until you move somewhere else. And then you look at other communities and other countries. And then you're like, oh, okay, this is what I missed. These are the things that I never got a chance to experience. But then again, not to put blame on anybody because our parents did the best that they could with the tools that they had. But then today, it's almost like the burden falls on us to try to heal from all those traumas so that we can break the cycle and now raise kids who are also as broken and as traumatized as we were. So it's a very complex situation because we grew up in a country that was completely broken. And so, yeah, today is when I'm trying to heal from those traumas that I grew up with, and I'm very grateful because I have a good support system, friends who understand what it is to grow up in that situation because they did, but also who got a chance to move somewhere else and be exposed to a different lifestyle and then be open enough to talk about these things on a deeper level, to be honest about it, and then to try to heal. So it's almost like we're trying to help each other through that process, but a lot of it is even understanding where the problem is. So anyway, briefly, that's what I would say. It's how do you heal when you grew up in a broken home, broken country?
Wow. Well, that is a really impressive assessment you've put together. And it's kind too. You know, you're not blaming, but you notice when you're with other people, they haven't been carrying this heavy burden from these childhood experiences of people being emotionally unavailable, physically unavailable, gone to work, gone from the mass genocide in 1994. And just reeling from that. How could they do any more? And you can't lean on your neighbor or your friend. They've been through the same hideous and profound losses.
Exactly. And then I would say another thing is, I think most of us just try to distract ourselves, either through partying or drinking, but not necessarily because we enjoy it. I used to think that I did. I used to say, I'm a fun person. I'm the party girl. I'm the person you call when there's a party, you know, and I was comfortable with that. I'm like, okay, everybody is the same way around me. But then you get here and you're like, no, the way you drink is a little bit too much. It's not normal. But for you to drink that much, it's not normal for you to be in the party mode all the time. And then I would feel ashamed because I'm like, okay, everybody else seems to be more stable and balanced in their lives. Like they can have a glass of wine or two. And this is a funny story, but my former colleagues, they would say the first time I started hanging out, they'd be like, oh yeah, we're going, you know, for happy hour after work. To me, happy hour is 4 or 5 glasses of wine, you know, and then we'll drink one glass and everybody's like, they're ready to go home. And I'll be so confused. I'm like, did you get excited all day long for one glass of wine? Like, you're wasting my time. What's the point? But then I would notice because they have more other stuff to do, right? Their lives are much more balanced than mine. I'm just going to go home and watch TV. So no wonder I'm comfortable sitting and having 3 glasses of wine. And then eventually I started realizing that even the way we drink is very unhealthy. And it's also associated and related to that, to the trauma. Or, you know, the calls that we have, group calls, and everybody's like, what are you doing this weekend? And all our activities were related to drinking. And I really think that the drinking that we do, specifically people from Rwanda, is definitely kind of associated to the fact that we lack creativity in terms of other activities that we could do, but at the same time, the trauma that we carry within ourselves.
It was a way to escape.
Exactly, to cope with that.
And then the silence of the pandemic didn't allow you the social escape. The silence brought on that heavy reflection.
Exactly. The pandemic made it worse, for sure.
Did anybody encourage people to talk in your community or your family when you were a girl growing up? Was anyone talking about and processing all the grief and loss from the genocide?
Absolutely not. First, because the way our culture is, number one, you don't talk about your weaknesses to strangers at all. You always have to keep a good image. We are very proud people, and talking about your challenges or your weaknesses, you know, doesn't make you look good. And then second, again, these are parents who don't want to open those wounds because they've decided to cover things up just so they could survive. So talking about it would open things that they will never be able to deal with. And then I would say for me, for example, people my age, I was only 3 years old, so I genuinely don't remember anything. The only stories I know are from what my parents tell me or what other people will talk about on the radio. But I think today people are doing it. They're now encouraging people to talk more about it, to open up and to heal. But that's because the country is at a point at least where it's kind of stable. So I think the next phase now, this is when people are opening up, 20 something years later, I think, 28, because it was 1994. But no, the culture of opening up and talking about your issues is not part of our culture. Yeah, definitely not.
I would imagine if it were me and I had lost so many loved ones and I had chosen just to keep going and make sure there's food on the table, I would be afraid that if I started, I might start crying and never be able to stop.
Exactly.
It takes so much courage. And you with the secondary traumas, because children growing up after the genocide didn't necessarily have physical scars, but they were experiencing all those aftershocks of trauma and cultural devastation and parents who weren't available. Mm-hmm. Well, because you've had to figure this out for yourself, you've really come to care about mental health for immigrants, for women, and for everyone. I think it's interesting because if you're being chased by a dog, you just run. You don't think about it. And then maybe you'll swim across the river to get out of the way. And so you're not processing it then. But it's only when you're really safely on the other side of the river and someone let you in their house and you can sit down, that's when you can process being chased by a dog. So maybe in generational terms, it took a whole generation for your mom. You know, if she were to look at you, she'd know it worked out okay. I did the best I could and my kids are okay.
Yeah.
And then maybe you can unpack it now.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. And I love the way you put it. The dog chasing is a great example. And then other times it's also like, let's say if we're racing, I don't know what they call it, passing the baton, you know, those
races. Relay race.
Okay. Then you give to someone and they have to give. So I feel like, imagine if your parent could also can go that far, and that's where you're picking the baton from. But then there's someone else who had a head start, you know, maybe was not delayed, maybe they didn't have to cross rivers, as you were saying. And I think for me, I felt like my responsibility was to run as far as I could so that when I pass the baton to my kids, they can go even further, because that's the only way. And if I'm scarred and if I have all those, you know, issues to heal from, if I don't, then I can't do it. Then I'm still dealing with basic things, which is, oh, I've put them in a good school or they're clothed, but that's not enough. I feel like you really have to work on those mental health issues as well so that we have a less traumatized generation going forward. So I don't do this for me. I genuinely think that I'm doing this for my unborn kids so that they have a head start in life that I didn't get.
It reminds me a little bit of you praying for people you didn't know when you were just a girl.
Yes.
You're taking care of people you don't even know.
Wow. Yeah, I hadn't thought about that. You know what? I think I get it from my mother. I really do. She used to do that. She used to write down prayers and she would pray for us, then our husbands or wives, and then our kids. I don't think she understood the traumas and all that, the mental health part of things, but I really think in her own way, she wanted us to be blessed. When you say blessing, it's such a huge thing. You really have to narrow it down into details. What does it mean that someone is blessed? So that's where I learned it from. It's from her, definitely. It wasn't just about her. She really cared about the next generation.
What have you learned about mental health that you can pass on now as people are starting to talk more about mental health and destigmatize sharing a weakness, for instance?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And to be honest with you, I didn't start chasing to work on my mental health. It just happened because I had no choice. Again, pandemic, then isolation, then anxiety attacks, then depression. So it was like, it was either that or I was losing myself. But so far, speaking from my own experience, honestly, the first thing is what I said, being kind to yourself. Because understanding that your journey is very different from someone else's journey. So some of the traumas you may be carrying won't be the same as so don't compare yourself, basically. Then be kind to yourself, feeling like you have done the best you could with the tools that you had. But then once you've established that, you're not blaming yourself for the mistakes you've made, you're not blaming yourself for the things you don't understand. I think observation is extremely important. I really try to learn from others, talking to other people, or like if you admire something about someone, ask them how they got to where they are. If I see someone who's successful in one area, I might go and be like, how did you make it here? And sometimes people are really honest and will give you like concrete examples and go deeper, not just be like, oh, I went to school. No, it's like, okay, maybe I had the right mentor. Maybe like I was volunteering. I don't know what it is, but those things I've used in my own life, like finding role models in society and then trying to learn from them what they've done to get to where they are. And then the third thing is definitely opening up. You need to be able to talk about your issues. We're not encouraged to talk about them. I know it might look like you're weak because you're admitting some of your weaknesses, but we all have them. The truth is we all do. So it's like, it's okay. It's okay to look weak, especially if you're looking weak to build yourself, because then you can be stronger tomorrow. So, and then being honest, I really believe in women supporting each other. I have like a strong bond with a few women that I 100% would trust with my life. And I feel like having a group of people that you can trust and talk about those, some of your experiences has also helped me tremendously. And I think there's so many other resources today. There is books you can read. Let's say some of the issues you have is anxiety. Can you read a book about how to fight anxiety? Can you listen to a podcast? So there are resources that maybe we didn't have before that people can have. You can go to therapy if you can afford it, or if you know, you know, a good therapist. So just use those resources, because you gain so much from doing the work, so much. You're a better person. You're much more happier. And, you know, you find out your insecurities are disappearing. You're much more confident. You contribute more to society, to your family, to yourself. Once you've dealt with those issues, you move on. But being scared, you're stuck. You're just stuck in one place. And it's hard work. It's not easy at all, because it's admitting your own, you know, weaknesses and the mistakes you've made, but then being kind to yourself to understand that mistakes were related to something bigger than you. And then how do I move on from here? So you have to do the work. It doesn't happen overnight. And I'm still on that journey as well. I'm not there yet. But I've made like tremendous progress. I'll give you a good example. People care a lot about what someone else might say, a comment about you, and then you might be offended, right? I find it harder today for me to be offended than I did before, because I'm much more confident in who I am. So if you say something that I don't relate to, or I know for a fact is not who I am, it will not affect me, because I already know who I am. So the more you discover about yourself, other people's opinions won't affect you, because you're much more confident in who you are. So I do the work, be comfortable with discomfort.
Wow, Nancy, that's an amazing suggestion, a whole envelope of suggestions, all very proactive and kind. Thank you. You are a person with abundant emotional intelligence, and it is remarkable how you've navigated uncharted waters as a child and a young adult. And I'm so impressed that you're now able to look out for others and help them make sense of their experiences too. That's quite a powerful and beautiful gift.
Thank you so much. Thank you. I appreciate that.
I'm Kate Manahan, closing today's program with a song that Nancy selected for us. And I wondered if you could tell people why you chose this song.
So my names are Kamaliza Nancy. And funny story is that I was named Nancy. I was named after Nancy Reagan. So maybe my destiny was to end up in America, because clearly I was named after the first lady. And then my last name is Kamaliza. It's a Kenyan name. I was named after an artist back home named Kamaliza. I love her music so much. My dad loved her music. And she has a song named after her called Kamaliza as well. And that's a song that's very dear to me. I don't know how to properly translate this, but it's like, who wouldn't love her, right? And all my friends sing this song to me all the time. I love it so much. And for obvious reasons, I was named after her. So my song today is Kamaliza by Kamaliza. Thank you. Is a cozy.